Perek Chaf Dalid, Pasuk Yud, Pasuk Yud, pardon me. Perek Chaf Dalid, Pasuk Yud. There's a very cryptic, fascinating story that we're about to read. Perek Chaf Dalid, Pasuk Yud, let's go. Vayetze Ben Ish Yisraelit, Vahu Ben Mitzri, Besoch B'nei Yisrael. He goes out, not even like an Ish goes out, he goes out. He's the daughter of a... is a son of a Isha Yisraelite and his father's an Ish Mitzri. He's from a mixed marriage. His mother's an Isha. His father is an Ish. However, he is nobody. He's just, Vayetzei, the ben of them. And where does he go to? Besoch B'nei Yisrael. No names, no descriptions. Vayinatsu b'machaneh b'in ha-Yisraelit v'ish ha-Yisraeli. And he goes to fight with an Ish. He goes into a Jewish camp. And he fights with a Jew. This Ben Yisraelite, the half-half guy who now is being addressed as a Ben Yisraelite, fights with a Jew. So far, so good. Vayikov ben ha-Yisha ha-Yisraelite. And this half-half guy curses Es Hashem. Vayikalel vayaviu oso Moshe. He curses God, and they bring him to Moshe. V'shem imo Shlomit bas Devri l'matei Don. And by the way, his mother's name was Shlomit, the daughter of a man named Divri from the tribe of Dan. And the question we should point out, just in terms of our questioning and points along the way, is what's his mother's name doing here? We've called him twice the Ben Yisraelite, and all of a sudden now we address him with his mother. We entitle him, we tell him the family, the whole tribe, the Gantz and Megillah. Vayinichu b'mishmar, they leave him in jail, I guess, in some type of guarded area. Lefrosh lem al pi Hashem, to ask God what to do because they had no idea. That's really the end of most of the story. A few basic questions just to reiterate some I pointed out along the way, some I just commented on, didn't phrase in question format. But number one, why are there no names for the most part? What is this guy's name? What is his father's name? We know his mother's name, although it's not mentioned in the beginning. That's bizarre. Who is the guy he fights with? We don't know any of this information. And what are the details that we have tell us about him? He fights Pesach B'nei Yisrael. He gets into a fight. Why are these details important? Why is Shlomit Ben Divri Lamate Don mentioned at all? Why does he curse Hashem if he's in the middle of fighting with Jews? Does he curse the Jewish people with Shem Hashem? Maybe, but that doesn't seem to be what the Chumash is saying. It sounds like he's actually cursing God. And then the response... he's also somewhat bizarre. Let's continue. Parakavdal, let's continue on. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Any other questions? Anything else I missed? People notice? Observations? Feel free. Anything? Okay. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Leimar. Hotziat Mikalel Michutz Lamachen. Now bring this guy out. V'samchu kol Hashemim et yedehem al rosho. V'ragmu oso kol heida el b'nei Yisrael. To the Berle Mar Ishish ki yakalel elokav v'nasach eto. Stone this guy. Have everyone stone him. And tell everyone that if they sin, then they'll have a big avera. If they sin and curse God, they'll be carrying a sin. But okay, shem Hashem mos yimash ramog ragom. Sorry, you can move call it that. Kiger kezach menagvo shem yimat. Now, if anyone curses God, they will be stoned. The big punishment, they'll be killed. Ki yikan kol nefesh adam mos yimash. And not only that, but if you kill anyone, you get killed also. What's funny about that? Yeah, this Mekalel only cursed God. The fact that you pass in the Shiloh makes a lot of sense. The fact that we talk about Ritzicha here can be totally out of place. Makan nevesh behema yishalmenu. And if a person damages someone else's animals, you have to pay for it. You can't damage people's property without paying. Nefesh tachas nefesh. Vishki tein mum ba'amiso kasher asa ken yasalo. And if I poke you in the eye, poke out your eye, you can poke out my eye. If I damage you, can damage me. Now, I'll be tarshu b'peh. We don't pass that way, you know, on a literal level, but what's this doing here? Shever tachas, shever ayin tachas, ayin shen tachas, shen kasher yitei mum ba'am dam ken yinah sem bo. Very bizarre. Umake b'emay shamen, umake dam yumas. If you hit an animal, you'll pay. If you hit a man, you die. That's repetitive. Totally unnecessary. Mishpat achad yelachem ki yerek ezrach yen Hashem ki yeni Hashem lukeichem. V'dar b'moshe al b'nei Yisrael v'yotzi v'atim mekalel m'chutz l'machna v'rig m'osu oven v'bnei Yisrael su kasher tzi v'ashem ez Moshe. The Jews take him out, stone him just like God had said. The fact that they listen to God is not surprising. What's very surprising is the fact that what? There are all these other halachas over here. Dinei Nezikin are over here. If a person's mazik, yes, another person. If a person's mazik, yes, the behema. If a person kills another person, there's a lot of relevant places to put these halachos. What are they doing over here? They seem to be totally out of place. What is the relevance here, really, is the correct formulation of the question? So far, so good? Those are the questions I'd like to try to answer today. Any other major question that you think I missed? Feel free. Yeah?
Isn't he considered fully Jewish? I was like, his mother was Jewish, so why does it really matter to...
I don't think the Torah is telling us his father is an Egyptian because there's such a thing as a halachic half and half person. The Torah is telling it to us because it thinks it has some relevance to do. I don't know exactly what the relevance is. Maybe he feels half-half. Maybe it's just important to know, you know, why later on it says shalom. I don't know exactly what, but it probably is saying something about him. We'll try our best to get to some of the answers in a minute. But yeah, what do you got, Jimmy?
What's the story doing here?
Yes. Those are excellent questions. Those are excellent, excellent questions. I don't know if I have an answer to those questions. I'm convinced that there is an answer. I even think the mahalach I have should answer it, but I haven't yet finalized it. Maybe I'll just set up the assist and let you guys get the goal if you can, you know, if you can finish it up. Yeah.
It's also strange that it says that he goes to Israel and he just gets the idea
yeah.
to fight.
Yeah. Who is he looking to fight? Just anyone? Anyone just goes into the Jewish camp and just starts fighting one guy? Like, what's he trying to accomplish? Yeah.
Was it to do with the menorah and that stuff that's like right before it?
Yeah, that's the same question Shim was asking. It's in the middle of a previous parsha. We finished the holidays, and now we talk about the Ner Tamid and the Lechem Aponim.
Like, it's not like the next
well, the Perek is the Christians. It's there is a, you know, the Jewish have a break there. But even still, it seems to be somewhat out of place here. You know, is this, did this happen? Why not, if anywhere, just stick it in by Midbar. Okay, I wanted to, those are the basic questions. So far, so good? I wanted to share with you a few more textual observations, which I think will begin to use as the clues and framework to begin to develop the theories that I think will answer most of these questions. If you look back to from Yud Gimel to Chav Dalet, the second, I guess, paragraph of this Mevarech Hashem, the Mekalat Hashem story, there's a chiasm, there's a chiastic structure over here. It goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, then backwards. If I had a, you know, J, H, G, F, E, D, C, B, A. I think I got that right. It's almost perfect. It's not exactly perfect, but it's almost perfect. If you take a look, let's go through the second paragraph one more time, from Sukkim Yud Gimel till the end of the Perek, and just notice it. We'll try our best to make comments in a little bit. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Leimor, God told to Moshe, God commanded, or God told the Jewish, told Moshe, God gave instructions. If you look at the end, Uvnei Yisrael Asuk, Asher Tzivah Hashem Moshe, those two phrases seem to go together. God spoke to Moshe, and they listened to what God said. Next, in Pasuk Yudalid, Hotziyat Mikalel, El Michutz LaMachane. And then you have a little bit of a Samchu Kol Hashem El Yidehem Al Rosho, Vargemu Oso Kol Heida. The three phrases I want to point out are Hotziyat Mikalel. If you look in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Vayotziyat Mikalel, El Michutz LaMachane, El Michutz LaMachane. You have an extra phrase back here in the beginning in Pasuk Yudalid, but Vargemu Oso Kol Heida, here you Vargemu Oso Oven. There is one small word change, Kol Eidah versus Oven. We'll talk about that hopefully a little bit later on. But it's almost like a word-for-word parallel. You with me? Then you have, I'm going to skip down to Pasuk Yud Zayin. I'm skipping two Pesukim, and we'll get back to that why a little bit later on. V'ish ki yakeh kol nefesh adam mos yumas. V'ish ki yakeh comes up in Pasuk Chav Bet. Am I wrong? Where to go? Chavalef, I'm sorry. Right? Umake Adam, Yumas. You have over here next. Umake Behema Yishalmenu. That comes up again in Chavalef as well. Umake Behema Yishalmenu. You have in your test. V'ish, Kiyitain Mum, Bamiso, Kasher Asa, Ken Yaselo. You have as well in Pasukaf, in the end of it, Kasher Yitain Mum, Ba'adam, Ken Yinasein Bo. I apologize, I skipped one, and it wants to go back and fill it in. In Yod Zayin it says, Kiger Kezrach B'Nagvo Shem Yumas, and in Chav Bet it says, Kiger Kezrach Yiyeh. So there are about eight or nine so far parallels, leaving that one major pasuk in the middle, which is Shever Tacha Shever Ayin Tacha Sayin Shein Tacha Shein. If you think about that, maybe Shever Tacha Shever parallels with Shein Tacha Shein, which leaves in the middle Ayin Tacha Sayin, and Ayin Tachas Ayin is a parallel as well. If you add them all up correctly, there should be 10 parallel languages, almost practically going in order. Sometimes you have like 1, 2, 3 are all put together, and then they're like, you know, 8, 9, 10 at the end. Then you go, say, 4, 6. But at the end of the day, there are 10 parallel languages all going in a chiastic structure. There's no way God didn't do this intentionally. The question is, why did he do it? What's the point? Is there any conclusion to draw from this textual observation, from this literary conclusion? What might the point be? And I'll try my best to make a few suggestions, but when we come back and try to develop the theory. But as for now, it's worthwhile to notice that not only does God offer a bunch of seemingly arbitrary halachas, but he's got this fancy chiasm. He writes the response to the Mekalel at Hashem in a chiastic structure, seemingly putting inside the Shever Tach Shever Ayin Tach Zayin Shein Tach Shein, or maybe even just Ayin Tach Zayin, maybe just the word Tachas. What's that all about, and why is the first half have a few extra phrases? The second half does, the second, the first, we'll get back to those phrases in a little bit. If you had kind of circled everything I said, you'll notice a bunch of extra words. We're going to go back and understand all those extra words that are not actually paralleled. They may just be gluing the words together, but I'd like to suggest even more to that, which just makes it cooler. Questions? Yeah?
So where's the structure from what Moshe said to what Hashem said? What's the... Where does the structure take place? In just Hashem's response?
When Moshe... Hashem tells Moshe
what to do,
and what they do, there's a chiasm. Okay. I'm torn if I should draw the conclusions that I'd like to draw from the text just now, or if I show you other parallels in Tanakh. Let's just draw the conclusions first. Let's start with that. Now, any theories? Why would the Torah call him a half Mitzri and half Yisraeli? What point might that tell the reader? What might one want to conclude from the name or description he has? Okay. What? Okay. Does he feel like a mainstream guy? How does he see himself? He sees himself as half in, half out at best. Maybe even biologically he's born into it, but on the other hand, he sees himself as maybe half-half. How does the narrator, God, Chumash, how does it refer to him every time except for the first? Only as a Ben Yisraeli. How should he be seen objectively? I think he should be seen as a Jew. He is seen as a half-half guy, but I think he should be seen as a Jew. Maybe he really is part of Klal Yisrael, but doesn't necessarily see it. And if he doesn't really see, he doesn't feel part of Klal Yisrael, he sees himself as half Mitzri, half Jew, or whatnot, what might that say, or how might that impact his actions? What were his actions? What does he do? What does he do?
Fights.
He fights. Why does he fight?
Jealous.
He doesn't see himself as part of it. He goes right betoch b'nei Yisrael and starts a fight. Whether it's a physical fist fight or it's just bickering, it's unclear exactly. Then he curses God. These are not the signs of someone who identifies with the people. He walks right into the middle of the camp, starts fighting, curses their God, his God, their God. I'd like to suggest he doesn't really fit in. I'd like to try to develop that a little more. What stories does this sound incredibly similar to in Chumash? If you look in the end of what?
Chumash?
And when I show it to you, you'll be shocked at how similar it is, I think. It's in Bamidbar. That's my only hint. Nope, not bad, but nope. Yes. The Mekoshe Sheitzim, the guy who was Michal Shabbos. Take a look in the end of Parsha Shlach for a moment. Take a look in Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Lamed Bet. If you want to keep a finger in each place, it might not be a bad idea. Perek Tezvav Pasuk Lamed Bet. There's a lot of interesting similarities. Between these two stories. Perek Tezvav Pasuk Lamed Bet. Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar. The Jews were in the midbar. Vayimtsu ish mekoshesh eitzim b'yom ha-shabbos. They found a Jewish guy gathering wood. Fire, stick, maybe. Sticks. Firewood, sticks. I don't know what. Eitzim on Shabbos. Ve'ekrivu oso ha-motzim oto mikoshe she'etzim el Moshe ve'al Aron ve'al kol heida. And what do? They bring him to, the people who find him, bring this mikoshe she'etzim to Moshe, to Aaron, and to the entire nation. Ve'enichu oso ba-mishmar. And then where do they put him in? Into? Into a mishmar, some type of guarded jail, whatever it was. Hilo parash mayaselo, because they had no idea what to do with him. Halachically, they weren't sure what to do. Ve'yom ha-shem Moshe. Most yumas ha'ish, this man should die. Ragom oso ba'avanim, kol heida michutz ha'machaneh. Everyone should stone him outside the machaneh. Ve'yotziu oso kol heida michutz ha'machaneh. Ve'yagimu oso ba'avanim ve'yamos. Kasher tziv ha'shem, it's Moshe. And they stone him and he dies. What are the obvious similarities? Yeah. The man was put into a mishmar, correct? Yeah, they stone both of them. Both of them have no name. I'll go through, I'll just read the list I came up with. It's a story of an unnamed man who had some type of incident with a bunch of other unnamed people. No one in either story practically, except for, we'll see, except for Mikhail's mother has a name, but no one involved in the story has a name. It's a man who was kind of separate and an outsider. The Mikhail we saw was already not mainstream. And this guy's kind of wandering around. They just kind of find him. Like, what was he even doing? You know, the Jews were in the desert, and they just kind of found him. The separated man, the man who was on his own, did a sin. A very big sin that warranted death, but no one knew the halacha. They put him into Mishmar overnight because they didn't know what to do. Beyond that, the man was stoned, and the phraseology is stoned by Kol Haida. The parallels in languages are shocking as well. The Mishmar comes up both in both places. The word Porash, they had no idea what to do with him in both places. Mosumas comes up in both places. Ragom Bavanim comes up in both places. Kol Haida comes up in both places. Michutz L'Machaneh comes up in both places. Vayotziu comes up in both places. Kesher Tziv Hashem Moshe comes up in both places. If you read through, I circled, in this Lamed Bet to Lamed Vav, these, you know, five psukim, the words that repeat themselves in both stories, there are more words that repeat themselves than don't. And there certainly is a textual connection over here. They're just these two bizarre, random, odd stories, and the question, I guess, is what's the point? What's the point of each of them? Beyond the similarities, I think you can even use these two stories as a contrast to kind of like play one off the other and try to figure out what Chumash's message is. One was in violation of Shabbos, Ben Adam Le Makom, while the other one was Mekalat Hashem while fighting Klal Yisrael. It's a little bit of a different type of thing. Maybe I shouldn't say Ben Adam Le Makom, that's not the right phrase. One is like a guy's a problem with his religiosity. He's not frum, while the other guy is almost like angry, attacking God and attacking the Jewish people. The Mekal attacked Bnei Yisrael. He went looking for a fight, while the Mekosha Shasim wasn't looking for anyone. Not only was he not looking for someone, but he didn't find anyone. Rather, they found him. The exact opposite. Beyond that, the Mekalil goes to Bnei Yisrael. The Mekosha Shasim again leaves, kind of just leaves the area and leaves the camp. Doesn't go. The Mekal goes betoch Bnei Yisrael. This guy's hanging out in the midbar, far away. Beyond that, the Mekalil story is interrupted with these dinim. The Mekosha Shasim story has nothing like that. The Mekal was making some ideological point, while the Mekosha Shasim was kind of like minding his own business. What's the point? Before I even stress what I think the point is, or make the point, there's one word that comes up in the Mekosha Shasim story 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. It's a subtle word, and it's the word oto. Vayikrivu oto hamotzim oto mikoshe etzim al Moshe ve'al Aron ve'al kol heida v'nicheu oto ba'mishbar, etc., etc. Ragom oto ba'avanim kol heida mechutz ma'achaneh v'yotziu oto kol heida mechutz ma'achaneh v'yagmu oto ba'avanim v'yamos. Doesn't come up at all in the previous story. Here 6 times and there 0. Beyond that, I'll make the point in a second. Beyond that, the mikoshe etzim, well, I think the point of the mikoshe etzim is oto, he's alone. He's a loner. He's not part of a group. What's he doing? He's out in the midbar. He's like doing nothing with his life, gathering sticks, because like, what else does he have to do? He's not doing anything particularly productive. We don't know what he's doing with those sticks. He's minding his own business. Everything's just kind of on its own. The Molech Mekoshe Eitzim kind of has no direction, no goal, no agenda. The Mekalel Et Hashem has a clear goal, a clear agenda, a clear purpose, a clear direction. It could be they're designed to like use this particular story, or the two stories are used to kind of like foil off each other. I'll just talk a little more about the Mekoshe Eitzim before I go back to our story. What's it doing over here in the middle of Bamidbar? I'd like to suggest it's based upon the first four words of the story. Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar. The Jews were in the Midbar. Why is that part of the story? I'd like to suggest that the Mekoshesh Eitzim was disappointed that the Jews were in the desert for so long. After all, what parsha does this take place in? Shlach. What just happened? The Meraglim. The Meraglim went there to Israel, spoke negatively about it, and God punished the Jews and said, you'll be here for... You know, not only will you be here 40 more years, which is a heck of a long time to do nothing for, but you won't even eventually get to where you're supposed to get to. You'll all die. That's very, very disheartening. That's the right word. Difficult to be optimistic after that. Difficult to say, wow, let's do it. Let's die in the next 40 years. Let's wait here 40 years till we die. Difficult to develop enthusiasm. I don't know if this story reflects all of Klal Yisrael, or some of them, or just this one individual, but I'd like to suggest that it's found right after the Meraglim because they're stuck in the Midbar. Vayihiyu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar. This guy just wanders. He's like, you want to know what? My life has no purpose. End up just wandering out of the desert, picking up sticks, doing absolutely nothing. And they tell him a message, no, you can't do nothing. We're still serving God over here. The story is adjacent. In other words, the upcoming story, the upcoming parsha is the parsha of Tzitzis. What's Tzitzis all about? Reminding yourselves that God's in the world. Looking at your clothing and recognizing God. I think the point is, although we're in the Midbar, realize that life is about serving God. And by the way, Tzitzis has the whole parallel from the beginning of the parsha. Chazal, I think, bookended the paragraph very nicely. What were the Meraglim supposed to do? Latur es ha'aretz. And what's Tzitzis? Lo taturu acharei levavchem. I think a lot of the Tzitzis point is that don't have a negative eye like the Meraglim, and don't have a miyayish, giving up, no direction in life at all, I, like this Mekoshesh Eitzim. But in contrast to Mekoshesh Eitzim, the Mekalel has direction. He has a vision. It's an evil one or a negative one, but it's his direction. He's got a passion. He's got an ideology. He's not just some guy wandering off, picking up sticks who they happen to bump into and find. This is a man of purpose. This is a man who's trying to accomplish something. And I thought that was certainly one of the critical differences. I'd like to suggest that there is another story that the Mekalel is really foiling off of. In other words, there's another story in Chumash that I think the Chumash is using to help, subtly help the reader get the right perspective. Let me share with you. I mean, I'll tell you, it's a fascinating story. It's a story in Shmos. Anyone know what that is? A little more of a clue. Yeah. Okay. What? Moshe Perek Bet. Take a look in Perek Bet and say for Shmos. Moshe goes out and sees a Jew, a Mitzri beating a Jew. Both stories start with the word Vayetze. Both in Vayikra, Chav Gimel Pasuk, here as well, Shmos, Perek, Bet, Pasuk, I guess Yud Gimel, or Yud Aleph, twice, but mostly Yud Aleph. There's a fight between two people. Each has a Mitzri and Jewish model. In other words, there's a person out there who has an identity of both Egyptian and Jewish. The Mekalel sees himself as, my mother is Jewish, my father is Egyptian. Moshe is also a half-half type of identity. The Mitzri and the half-Jew are kind of fighting. The half-half person ends up getting separated from his group. The half-Mitzri, half-Jewish person, the Mekalel, gets separated from Klal Yisrael, while Moshe, who's the half-half guy, kind of separates from what? From all of Egyptian culture. He has to flee because of this story. And both stories leave out everyone's family members and everyone in the story except for Moshe. In other words, there's a bunch of no-name people in the story fighting and back and forth. And it could be that's to draw your attention and particularly to frame, to highlight what I think are the critical differences, and I think it's even stronger. Moshe's at the beginning of his career, while the Mekalel is at the end of his. Moshe is successful in his fight. He accomplishes his goal, while the Mikalel, he fails. He dies. At the end of the story, Moshe has to flee. He has to leave the place where he's at and go somewhere else. And what happens to the Ben Yisraeli, to Mikalel? He's incarcerated. He's put in the Mishmar. He can't go anywhere else. Moshe goes to help out to end the fight, while the Mikalel goes to start a fight. Moshe goes out to his brethren to help them, while the Mikalel goes out to alone to attack his brethren. Moshe has a specific person he wants to fight, the oppressor, while the Mikalel is looking to fight anyone at all. That's why we don't know who he fights, because no one particularly has in mind. It's Yisraeli who he's fighting. Moshe enters in quietly and carefully. He's looking, many times he looks around, Vayikvan Kol V'cho. He doesn't want it to be known. He's not looking to make a big deal. He's just looking to get the job done. While by contrast, the Mikalel doesn't just walk into the middle of the people, start up a fist fight, but he actually curses God. He's looking for attention. It takes time for people to know what Moshe did. While immediately they caught the Mikalel, Moshe hides the Mitzri in order to help hide his actions. Again, the Mikalel does everything before Hesia. Moshe has a reason for fighting the person. He's trying to save someone. The Mikalel has no reason at all for instigating. He's just a troublemaker. What then is the point? And those are a lot of differences. What then is the point? Before I get to the point, Rashi has a fascinating comment on here. Anyone know the comment I'm referring to? Who is the Ish Mitzri according to Rashi? This guy's mother, Mikalel's mother? Mikalel's father, rather? That's obvious. Because Shomis Bais Divri is the mother.
Oh, you're saying
you're right. You just answered the question the wrong way. The answer is the Ish Mitzri. Rashi points out, quoting the Medrash, the Ish Mitzri, who the Mikalel's father is, the guy who Moshe killed. Now, I don't know if Rashi and Chazal are making a point based upon biological, historical information, or it could be they're making a textual jump, which is, let's link these two stories together. But I'd like to suggest I wasn't the first one who thought of this parallel. I think it was Rashi, and before that, Chazal. What then is the point of this parallel and the differences? Moshe has nothing to gain and only to lose when he fights the Mitzri. He's willing to put everything on the line to do what he believes is right. To care for people, sensitivity, care, to take care of the oppressed, of the slaves, of the underprivileged. The Ben Yisraelit has nothing to gain and only to lose. And yet he still lacks the appreciation he should have for being part of Klal Yisrael. Moshe hitting the Mitzri signifies himself denouncing his Egyptian status. When Moshe hits the Mitzri, no longer is he the same prince of Egypt he once was, and his life changes from here on out. Moshe loses his identity as a Mitzri, and what happens to the Mikalel? He loses his identity as a Jew. And it could be, if this is really the point, why does the Torah call him? At first they call him half Mitzri and half Jew. Ben Yishai Yisraelit, who Ben Mitzri? Because that's how he saw himself. But you want to know what we call him next? Only a Ben Yisraelit, because that's how we saw him. And when he's caught, and he's finally, incarcerated, when he's put in the Mishmar, then, or just before, when they bring him to Moshe, we tell you, by the way, Shem Imo is Shlomit Bas Divri L'mate Don. The whole time you didn't see yourself this way, but you were one of us. You had a Jewish mother. You have a Jewish grandfather. You come from a Jewish tribe. You separated yourself from us, but deep down you're one of us. But this guy didn't disagree with his family. What's his mother's name? Shlomit. Where does it come from? Shalom. He's not a man of peace. His grandfather's a man of divri, speech, talk, communication. He's not a man of communication. He walks in silently and starts fighting. It could be this man doesn't see himself as part of Klal Yisrael. And the story really is, the more he wants to denounce his Jewish status, the more he wants to make a point towards Klal Yisrael and God by cursing them and fighting against them. He's saying, I'm not Jewish. I don't identify with you. I'm separate. I'm something different. I think that really answers a lot of our questions. The no names are because he's attacking all of Klal Yisrael. He has no name because he's not an ish. He doesn't see himself as that way. He goes Pesach B'nei Yisrael because that's what he's looking to do. He starts a fight because that's exactly what he's looking to do. He's looking to start fighting to get away from his Jewish identity. Only later on does he get a name, as we mentioned earlier on. And why does he curse Hashem if he's fighting a Jew? The answer is he's looking to denounce his Jewish identity, both by fighting the Jews as well as by cursing God. If that's correct, I'd like to maybe go back and try to explain a few other things. What's the major message that the Torah says to this guy, to this Mikalel? The answer is, if you don't want to be part of us, we don't want to be part of you. You were one of us. You were Jewish. We took you in. We made you one of us. We thought you identified with us. We let you to, but you didn't want to. If that's the case, what you do to us, we're going to do back. You don't want to be part of us, we're going to get you out as well. You don't want to identify with us, this is what happens to you. And if that's the case, you know what the halachos are in addition to being mekalel et Hashem? Nefesh tachas nefesh. Shein tachas shein. Shever tachas shever. Regel tachas regel. You know what those things are? What you do to us comes back to you. You kill a person, you die. You poke out his eye, you get your eye poked out. You hurt someone's property, you kill his animal, you pay for it with you pay for it from your property. All these halachos are all about mida keneged mida. And you know what? Right is in the middle of the chiasm, and that's how chaotic structure works a lot of times. You have A, B, C, D, E, D, C, B, A, and E is right in the middle. It's like, boom, the most powerful sentence, pasuk, that's found in a chiasm. You know what that is? Shever tachas shever, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein. You know what's right in the middle? Ayin tachas ayin. You don't see yourself as part of us, we don't see you the same way. And even in the middle of ayin tachas ayin is the word tachas. That's right in the middle. And if you look, there's a few other words that are added in to this particular story that in the chiasm that don't make themselves in the first half and the second half. I mean, they only find themselves in the first half, not the second half. For example, the first half, who stones him? Vayagamu oso kol haida. Well, the second half, it's vayagamu oso oven. In the beginning, you have kol nefesh, where nefesh comes three or four times. Nefesh tachas nefesh, kol nefesh, umaka nefesh behema, posit is maka behema. In the beginning, it's v'ish ki yitain mum ba'am yisa, while at the end, it's kasher yitain mum ba'adam, ken yinasein ba. What's the difference? The difference is the first half, it's much more personal. It's much more subjective. It's ba'am yisa. It's nefesh. The extra psukim added in are the Jews. They put their hands on his head. And they tell all the Jews, look, this is what's going to happen to you if you continue to curse God. I'd like to suggest, although they're in addition to the center of the chiasm, which has the point of Shever Tach Shever Ayin Tach Sain Shein Tach Hashein, I'd like to suggest there's another critical point to the chiasm, which is the difference between the first A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, when it's going in order, versus the backwards. You know, the backwards level of, again, J, I, H, G, F, whatever it was, you know, E, D, C, B, A. When it's going forward, it's very subjective. It's very personal. On the way back, it's very objective. It's not Ba'am Yisro. Who's going to Ki Yitain Ish Ba'am Yisro? It's Ki Yitain Mum Ba'adam. What's the point? The point is exactly what we're trying to drive home. You were part of us. We saw you as Ba'am Yisro. We saw you as a Nefesh. We saw you as one of us. And when you refused to identify with us, when you denounced your Judaism, and when you cursed God, when you separate yourself from us, we separate ourselves from you. The point of this story is both reflected by the story itself, the contrast to the Mekosh Yitzim, the contrast to the Mitzri story with Moshe, Rashi's point about that, as well as the chiasm, may be this person without a name is not that way by chance. He doesn't see himself as identifying with us, and his response, he's sent out, he's killed, he is no longer part of us. Okay, we'll stop here. No. Just want to add in one more point. I was thinking about it, that the Mekalel contrast, Mekosh Yitzim, he was Makosha Shaitan Dafka on Shabbos. And it could be. The point is that Shabbos is about direction. Shabbos is God created the world and rested on the seventh day in order to reflect, in order to what was last week and what is next week. Shabbos is all about figuring out where you're coming from and where you're going. And it was Dafka B'Shabbos, the guy was walking out saying, I have no direction. Dafka on Shabbos, this guy with Makosha Shaitan, furthers the point that he had no sense of direction, while the Mekalel had a lot of direction.